Welcome to the Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Are you a small business owner who thinks they pay too much in taxes? We can help. Give us a call or book a meeting by clicking the link in the show notes to book a free financial consultation so you can have peace of mind about your financial future. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Unlock your benefits package as the key to unlocking your workforce. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, here with my co-host, Al McDonald. Al, we're heading into later Friday, Podcast Friday, one of my favorite days of the week. What do you got planned for this weekend? You getting out on your bike?
Oh, I don't know, my friends. Not looking the greatest weather. And if you know me, as much as I love to cycle, I'm kind of a fair weather cyclist. So if it's coming down with some heavy rain or cold, I'm probably not there. I wait for the nice days.
Might be some indoor cycling in Al's future.
Exactly. I'll get on my trainer.
Well, I'm really happy because we're reconnecting with an old friend of the podcast. First time we met him, actually, we went out to tour his facility. Was so impressed. He's done a ton more since. So with no further ado, returning to the podcast today is our friend Nick Spina, who was on the show a few years ago. Welcome back, Nick.
Thank you for having me. Great to see you guys again.
Good to see you as well. And, you know, it's been interesting to follow your journey because, of course, we're connected on LinkedIn and I get to see press releases and things like that. And you've been very, very busy, my friend. When you were on the podcast last and when we first met you, you were introduced as the CEO of LiveFit Foods. But things have changed a bit since then. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've been up to?
Yeah, definitely. A lot has happened. A lot has happened. I think like when we originally met, we were, you know, just running a really growing a food business where we would have fully cooked meals and deliver them across the country. Since there's been a lot that has happened, we have acquired a number of different brands in the food space. We made anything from Cabo Labs, which is human grade pet food, as well as Puppy Gang, again, human grade pet food, to Chef to Table, to, you know, a beverage company, to a logistics company, and a lot of real estate. We've been on the real estate path, but most importantly is, you know, at our core, we want to be sustainable. So we actually opened up a 30,000 square foot worm farm in our basement with a partner, and all the food scraps go down into the worm farm, and the worms are quite happy. They eat the food scraps, which is turns into worm castings, and then that's upcycled, turns into worm poop, which is a high quality soil, and delivered back at the farms and garden centers. So you can kind of see where the beginning stages of our circularity or sustainability really started. At the same time, I think right after we talked, or the first time I was on the podcast, we hired on a group of scientists to research how to make a tray out of sugarcane pulp that could do everything that plastic could do, because we wanted to get away from plastic packaging. So we invented a tray out of sugarcane pulp, which is fantastic. Our entire group, pretty big breakthrough moment, became fully sustainable, 0% waste all around. At the same time, I went to the head scientist. I said, hey, I've got an idea. I want to create a liquid that can dissolve plastic waste. And he looked at me and he said, Nick, I've been working on this for 6 years. And I thought, okay, well, what do you need from us? He said, well, some funding and whatnot. And so I said, okay, well, if we fund this, we want to turn this into a business. And he said, okay. And that's how Denovi Labs is born. And 6 months later, he calls me back and he says, Nick, we figured it out. I invite him into our boardroom. And he takes a PET plastic water bottle and he dissolves it in front of my eyes in 5 minutes. And I looked at him and I said, what the hell kind of magic trick is this? He says, well, Nick, I didn't just dissolve the plastic water bottle into thin air. He actually, to get a little scientific here, depolymerized it into the core building blocks of plastic, which is called a TPA monomer or terephthalic acid. And terephthalic acid, you can take that and make new virgin state or birth state quality plastics out of it. So you can upcycle it into PET pellets, which you can sell for about $2,000 USD per ton, or you can upcycle it into Kevlar or similar to Kevlar for $15,000 USD per ton. So now we have brought in a co-CEO to FE Group or LiveFit. FE Group is kind of the new brand name that we have to describe the parent company of all the groups put together. So we've got a co-CEO in there, very close friend of mine for many years, and a very smart individual, Rashad. So he's running the food group, and I'm focusing about 95% of my time on Denovia Labs. And we're 30 days away here from opening up our first commercial scale Denovia machine. We are the fastest and most economic process of our kind globally. So we can recycle plastic and upcycle it into new virgin state plastics in 5 minutes. Well, the nearest competition that we've seen does it not even close to that.
Wow.
I'll stop myself there. I could talk about it forever. So,
and I could listen to you forever. And I'm reminded why I wanted to have you back on the show, because the energy that you are sending out, and it just inspires me as an entrepreneur. We're not obviously in complete different lines of business, but the energy that you have for doing what you do and the passion that just shines through is incredible. I'm sitting here with my Hydro Flask, and I'm so glad I'm drinking out of this today and not a plastic water bottle, because it would be such a letdown. But I wanted to ask you that whole area of sustainable, because it was the first time that we met, you were telling me that, and we talked about the worm farm, but some of these other ideas are newer. But there's that theme of wanting to be sustainable and helping the environment. Where does that come from? Is that something you've cared about when you were just starting out? Or is that something as you got to learn more about that you thought, well, this is something that we can help out with? Like, where does that come from?
I've always, ever since I was a kid, I mean, I scuba dive. I've, you know, gone down to depths of deeper than 160 feet. And I've seen what the damage of waste does to the planet and the ocean. You know, even when I was younger, I was in Bermuda and I saw a full beach littered with trash. So I knew at a young age that there was an issue, and it's accelerated globally, right? And the root to that is because for a number of reasons, economically, it's like plastic waste. There's no value to really recycle it. Sorry, there definitely is value, but it's not like, for example, like no one really knows this, but people have a blue recycling bin, right? Only 10% of a recycling bin is actually recycled. The rest of it is incinerated or ends up in a landfill anyways. So it's like once you start really peeling the onion back and looking at the industry, you're kind of like, what's the point? So I think like at the root of it is technology, and there just isn't technology out there that is, one, sustainable enough, but number two, a lot of companies, for example, there's a company called PureCycle out there. I hope they don't sue me for making these comments, but it's just the truth. But it is, they take a long time to upcycle it, a very green process, but they can't make money at it. Their market cap's at like 950 million USD. So there's a clear demand that the world wants this solution to exist, but no one has created something quite to date that can do it that well. Fortunately for us, from day one, we're net positive. We've got about a 50% margin in that scale that goes up to 65%. And we do it at very low energy, about 70 degrees, and we can do it very quickly. So we're working with multiple multi-billion dollar partners to make an impact at scale, because the majority of the world's waste is actually managed. If it's not in the ocean, it's managed by massive waste management companies or the like. So it's working with partners like Waste Connections, Goodwill, Timac, you know, which are all advisors, investors, or partners of ours, and to work with them to dissolve their massive collection of waste material. And that's how we're going to make it done globally, is being able to scale up via our partners.
You talked about your new process kind of being, you know, leading edge globally. And we were talking actually earlier today with another podcast guest, and he was talking about something that they're doing that is leading edge globally. So you're the second person today to talk about this. And I asked him the question. I'm going to ask you the same question. Like, what do you think the environment is right now for technology and funding around the opportunities to be at the leading edge, I'll say here in Canada, but we know there's lots of demand for it. What's the opportunity from being able to develop it and being able to fund it?
In clean tech, there's a lot of money in clean tech. If you have a technology that can disrupt, you know, the common saying in the venture capital is, you know, the money will find you. You don't really have to find the money if you have disruptive technology. And we've seen that firsthand. Right now, we are raising capital for our Series A, and we've got a commitment of $40 million. We've got 80% go to data room rate after our first call with different groups. And we've met with 20, 25 groups and counting right now, world leaders from Patagonia to massive oil companies to BASF and, you know, the world's largest chemical manufacturing company to Pepsi and whatnot. So very exciting, but it's not necessarily, I think, like a lot of people when they raise capital, it's very exciting, but now you have an obligation to execute and do what you say you're going to do. And there's no doubt about that, that we have the right team and the ability to do that. And we're doing it today. Like I said, we're 30 days away from opening up our first kind of commercial scale machine, first of its kind. And we've created that from scratch. We've been working on it for a long time. It's very expensive. I was just on a video this morning at 7 a.m. with our engineers that are building it. And I saw it working for the first time. And it's quite remarkable. So in terms of groups, there's definitely capital out there for clean tech. It's going to the right companies that are making an impact.
Nick, I want to go back to, and this is just really selfish, nothing to do with business, but you mentioned you're into scuba diving. Where's your favorite spot that you've been so far?
I've been in some pretty cool spots. I have a number of places to go on my list. I mean, I did a really deep dive in Mexico once, 160 feet. That was very cool. You could hear whales singing at those depths.
Wow.
I saw tuna following me down there. Very bizarre experience. You know, when you dive to those depths, you kind of, like my watch was red and then I looked at it at those depths and it was black.
Oh,
so like color starts, you know, really kind of disappearing at those depths, certain colors, obviously very cold, very alien, you know, lots of weird looking creatures down there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's deep for a human, but yeah, lots of weird jellyfish. I've had some really good dives in Tobermory, you know, where the water is like very clear and you can kind of see ships down there, but I've been in Thailand and the area as well. And that was a lot of fun for seeing the reefs, but it's been a bit since I've been out, so I'm excited to get my gear back on and get at it. How about yourself?
I don't dive. I do snorkel, so I've done a few places. I've spent over the last 30 years a lot of time in the Caribbean, but the reason I asked was one of my buddies, he actually moved to Malta, and he's part of the stunt team out there where there's a lot of movies filmed out in Malta, and he was in Mexico as well, and he did one of these cenote dives. And just the footage was incredible. And he even said, Al and I were talking about this earlier, Al gets out on his bike and that's where he gets his Zen time. I'll hit my treadmill and get into a run. And that's why I'll hit my Zen time. And my buddy out in Malta says, that is when everything just disappears when he's diving, right? Almost that eerie silence. And to your point, just gets so dark. So no, that's really cool. Back to business and talking about the podcast. So you've acquired a number of companies, a number of different types of companies, human food. You mentioned a puppy food company, a dog food company. How do you decide when to invest in a company or acquire a company? Like, what do you look for?
It really depends on a number of different factors. There's so many things, and you know, I'm still learning, even though we've done so many different acquisitions, but founder capability or involvement, you know, having the proper funding adequate for the different brands, or really depending on a lot of the market conditions of like where the market is at, like, is there an opportunity to grow? And you're definitely on the number side of looking at the LTV per customers, or let's say the average cost per acquisition, which is important. And there's typically like waves, right? Like something gets out into a market and there's an opportunity to scale it up and become the dominant player in the market, which, you know, the Cabo and the Puppy Gang girls have done extremely good job at. You know, we've been able to kind of help bring all of the processing in-house. It saves on the margin. And we make all the food for it, right? So then we're very complimentary for the business in that kind of a sense. But every single deal is its own special deal in itself. At the end of the day, it would be similar to how a bank would look at a company to finance debt on. Very similar.
Nick, you've grown a lot since we last talked to you. You've got some incredible things ahead of you by the sounds of it, some incredible opportunities and some research and some innovative things. Talk a little bit about success. Like, what does it mean to you? Looking back where you've been already and where you see yourself going, how do you measure success for yourself?
It's constant. That's something that's really important to talk about, where I think, like, you know, when you're a young entrepreneur, you kind of think like, oh, I want to get to a certain level, but it never stops. Like, you get to a certain level and then you just want to continue going to the next level and the next level and the next level. It's kind of an interesting thing to think about. And for me, and originally I wanted to build Canada's largest fully cooked meal group. And now we're here and we stumbled across clean tech and executed it and continue growing. So it's interesting. I mean, it also depends on, you know, where people are at personally in their lives. And I'm kind of the type of person where, you know, I kind of like constant stimulation. I like the challenges to a certain extent. And I love getting excited by new ideas. So here we are. I've heard of like a lot of founders though too, selling their businesses and then, you know, made $100 million, $200 million, $500 million. And then they kind of like
get bored.
Kind of like I have these heart to heart conversations with them and they say, hey, like I've lost my purpose.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And then they end up trying to buy their company back or start something new. So it's definitely dependent on like the personality of the person, right? So success is, there's a thousand different ways to achieve success as you go along. You might reach your first kind of success criteria and we'll keep upgrading, continue wanting more.
I think that's going to resonate with a lot of people because that's exactly how I feel. When I look back, I write things down. Just that's what I do, right? So every once in a while, I'll go through these old books and I'll realize, Jesus, like when I was dreaming about this, that's where we are today. And now, of course, I'm dreaming about the next level. And for me personally, when people have said, you know, if someone backed up the money truck tomorrow and offered you a bunch of money, that would be great. But then what? Like, I can't imagine myself just saying, okay, that's it. I'm off to Aruba and I'm going to lie on the beach for the rest of my life. I mean, that might be great for 2 weeks or so.
Right.
But then what next? So I think a lot of entrepreneurs would feel that way. And again, even if you're exiting for a significant amount of money, and I was talking about this earlier, there's an insurance guy or former insurance guy. I follow his podcast, Patrick Bet-David, in the US, and he exited his insurance company that he built for $250 million. And most people, you'd think with $250 million, would say, I'm set. That's it. You know, he's 45 years old. Let's go live the good life. But no, he's working harder than ever and he's building a media company now. So I find inspiration in people like those because I thought, I don't want to stop. And it's not like I'm going to be on the golf course. Nick, I know you invited us out for golf one time when we tied last. And I thought, okay, we can go out for a golf game, but that wouldn't be my whole existence. I do want to go back because we're talking about what success means to you. Because I've heard a number of entrepreneurs talk about this, and I want to run it by you to see if it's fact or fiction. Is there a formula in your mind to success?
A formula. I mean, yes, I would say there's a formula. I would say, like, you have to be smart enough to be able to know how to execute and understand the opportunity, but dumb enough to actually do it. Because, you know, the people who are super smart, and I don't want to say, I mean, I even think the word smart is a little funny. Experience, I think, is the best way to say it. You know, the people who are extremely experienced will identify risk and not take the risk. You know, entrepreneurs don't see risk the same as other people. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it, right? To actually take your own money and to risk it to do something or build something with it, you know, you have to have like a clear vision. So I think that's like number one is clear vision. And you need all these different points to be able to execute very well. Number two is clearly understanding your customers' needs or the opportunities' needs. Number three is exceptional management. I think management is extremely important. You can't run a big business or organization without having people who can execute. Because you're not going to be able to do it all by yourself. I would say number four is being resilient. Like your plan is not going to go as planned. You're going to come up with challenges daily, big and small. And you have to have the ability to execute under pressure. Because I see a lot of people, and I mean, I'll say this, it's not comical, but you know, there's a deal that we're working on. And a couple months ago, out of the six people involved with the deal, two people had heart attack symptoms.
Oh, geez.
Right? So it's like you have to be able to really handle the pressure as you grow. And the thing is once you get from 0 to 1 million in value to 1 million to 10 million and 10 million to 100 million and 100 million to a billion and a billion to two, you have to level up with every single one because it takes a different set of skills at every single level. And just because you got to 100 million doesn't mean that you're going to get to a billion, right? So it's constant. It never stops. It never stops, right? The pressure never stops. And unless you sell the company, right? But even then, you have to, in most cases, stay on for 2 years and
that's right.
Continue being management for the company. And you don't get the full payout unless if you execute still. So yeah, but it's what we sign up for, right?
Good answer, because I've never asked that question. And I've always wondered because I hear people talking about it. And that was an excellent answer, considering I just threw that at you as well. So well done.
Not all my deals that people have heart attack symptoms, I'll say that. This one just happened to be a very sizable deal. And, you know, for a lot of people, if things don't go through, it is the difference between winning and losing, right? But again, that's the game that we're in, right?
I did like one of the things you said. Well, it was the very first thing you said, starting out, you know, a little bit of naivety is probably a very good thing, because if you knew what you knew at the end, at the beginning, like you said, you probably wouldn't go in.
Oh, God, yeah.
But not knowing some of that stuff, you're thinking, oh, how bad can it be?
Right, right. You have to be extremely resilient. And the majority of billionaires that I know that are partners and friends of mine, they know a ton of people. But the people that actually hang out around them is a very small group. And you kind of really do have to have those very ride or die type of people around you that are not just with you because of money, right? You want to make sure people are around you that have your back regardless of whatever the outcome is. And that's how you really win together, because you have a close group of people who have each other's backs that is able to, you know, for example, like Denovia right now, you know, world devastating technology. Do we get on calls with groups that want to know more about our technology for some reason, right? So it's like, or what if people in my network knew about the technology and, you know, someone offered them $20 million to get the technology? These are the types of things as you go forward, is like, those are the quantums. Like, could someone, you know, share our secret to another group for the upside of making money on it? Fortunately, we've got a fantastic group around us, but like any innovative company, you have to keep those things really tightly knit close to your chest, and you don't tell anybody about it, right? And that's how you kind of protect yourself there. But yeah, it's hyper aggressive, and that's just the world we're in, right?
Nick, you talked about stress and those deals, and unfortunately, hopefully those people are okay, you know, with the heart attack symptoms.
No one died. They're okay.
Good, good. Very good to hear.
Yeah.
I have a buddy who made partner by 40 at one of the large law firms in Toronto, and he would tell me, on the regular, young guys, like things just showing up in life. And obviously it was from stress and things that they were facing. As an entrepreneur yourself, and you talked about leveling up at each level, right? Skills are required. So it becomes a little more pressure, I would imagine. What are the things that you're doing to manage stress while you're growing the company?
You know what? I think like 2 years ago, I had a really big moment where stress really caught up and I was extremely overwhelmed and realized that what I was doing to combat stress or pressure is a sign that you're growing, right? In most cases. However, you do have to combat it, because if you naturally can't combat it, it will catch up on you and completely put you into freeze mode or whatever. You're not able to think clearly. A lot of people will, depending on who you are, some people get very angry all the time under stress. They lash out. Their emotions overtake the logic side of them, which is, it's human nature to do that, right? So things that I do, you have to really train your head to really look at things logically. And, you know, you actually create, what are they called, pathways in your brain that after a certain point of time, just start focusing on the logic and your emotion is kind of tucked back. So you're able to see clearly. However, at one point I was taking a cold bath daily. I was doing breathing exercises. I was meditating for half an hour at least to kind of get to that level to combat the stress there. But another big thing is also to not fight it, just let it happen, right? Stress is stress. It's also a sign that something, you know, in your head that needs to be done that hasn't been done yet. So the best way to combat stress is actually just to be on top of everything 100%. And then you won't be overwhelmed, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So I keep a list of constant things throughout my day. I always have lists everywhere of everything that I know I need to do. And by the end of the day, I'll make sure that I have to have everything on the list crossed off. And then I know I don't have anything to be overwhelmed about because I'm on top of it, right? But some people might be like, oh, you know, I need to raise capital for my project. I'm very stressed about it. It's like, okay, get to work. Oh, I don't know how to raise capital. Okay, find someone, talk to somebody who does. YouTube it, Google it. You always have the tools within your reach to be able to overcome whatever it is. I very strongly believe that there is always a path to success, even if you're under insane amounts of pressure. And there's always a path to overcome whatever situation you're in to come out on top of it.
I love that. The cold bath you're talking about, is that the cold plunge?
Cold plunge. Yep.
What temperature were you setting that at?
Like 1 degree.
Yeah. I haven't got there yet. Cooling up to it. I started at the end of the shower now, turning it off to cold. And just trying to spend as much time there. You know what? It does. It gives you that little jolt. I don't know what it is. Between that and sauna, that's my go-to. That's how I manage it. Well, we've come to the point in the podcast where, and this would be new for you, Nick, because when we had this, Al hadn't introduced his signature question. The way you've answered, you've already answered the question, but we're going to ask it anyway, because this can be business related. It can be something personal related, family, whatever the answer is. But I just have this sneaking suspicion you have a great answer for this anyway. So Al, we'll let you take it away.
Wonderful. Thank you. Here we go. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about any of those proverbial trees that you might be planting?
Yeah, I think for Denovia, for sure. I think Denovia, you know, cleaning up the world's plastic issue, and it's going to take a long time to get to globally here. But fortunately enough, it's a start, a big start. And through TIMAC, we're directly with Maersk. Maersk is cleaning up. Have you heard of this floating pile of trash as big as Texas?
I have. Yeah, yeah.
So they're actually chipping away at that. And we're going to be dissolving that trash. So that's just one of our partners, and we're going to be dissolving thousands of tons of trash from that right off the bat, or upcycling it. It's phenomenal. But to think of where this can go in 50 years, 10 years, 5 years, right? So it could very well become the world's status quo recycling method. We would no longer have to kind of create plastics from oil anymore. So I think, like, in terms of planting trees for other generations to kind of sit in the shade, I think that's definitely one of my biggest ones.
Yeah, well, thanks for that. And I will thank you in advance on behalf of the planet for thinking of that and providing that solution, because, yeah, you brought up that pile of trash that's floating around in the ocean. So anything that we can do to be able to help that, kudos to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you very much.
Well, Nick, I appreciate, you know, it's so good to talk to you. We got to know you over the years, and it's been a few years since we've done the podcast. So thanks for coming back. Really appreciate it. And thanks for sharing your journey. I think it's going to be an inspiration to a number of people. What's the best way for people to reach out to you if they have any questions about yourself or what you're doing at your group of companies?
On Instagram or LinkedIn, either or is fine, or email nick@denovialabs.com. Yeah, one of the three is completely fine.
Okay, I'm going to connect with Nick on Instagram, and it'll be meme central, my friend. I'll be sharing all the memes that I find funny. So anyway, that does it for today's episode. We really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. And as we've seen here today, success leaves clues. See you next time.